Football is life. And Ted Lasso is our subject, of course. I'm Jason Snell. We're here to discuss season 2, episode 6 of Ted Lasso, The Signal. And I've sent out the signal to bring in our panelists for this episode. Brian Hamilton joins us. Hello, Brian Hamilton.
I am a strong and capable man. I am not a piece of crap.
Okay. Yes. That's an affirmation. Just maybe skip the second sentence. Mike Hurley is here. Hello.
You can call me the Wonder Kid.
I am going to, and of course, as we know, you're here because you're our English football expert.
Hello, mate.
Okay, did that ludicrous display last night.
And that voice you heard is Adina Hurley. Hi, Adina.
I don't really know how to talk to you, Jason.
It's working. The signal. Lots of things happen in The Signal. Lots of things. I feel like it's the show kind of picking up pace after our Christmas episode and our rom-com episode. One of the things that I think is interesting about this episode is that this season of Ted Lasso has been comfortable taking some time jumps because they want to kind of tell, a longer story of the season. Remember, season one, he sort of comes in mid-season. And so here we start this episode with Richmond having done well now that Roy Kent has joined the coaching staff, which happened last time. They're on a bit of a winning streak, and they're in the FA Cup quarterfinal, which sport expert Mike Hurley, Do you want to explain the FA Cup to the listeners?
In the most basic of terms, it's where all English football teams can play in one competition, no matter what league they are in. So I think Ted does a decent job, actually. Yeah.
March Madness.
Saying, hey, it's March Madness.
Except throughout the whole season, they play this tournament. I know all about the FA Cup because I'm an Arsenal supporter, and it's the only thing Arsenal has won in the last 20 years, so or 15 years. So it's not that important, but it's something. And for a lower division team to win, it would be incredible. And it gives our friends at Richmond an opportunity to play, in this case, Spurs, an actual like famous Premier League team, which they wouldn't otherwise play because they're down in the championship.
Yeah, I had a thought about the FA Cup thing because I know that when we have spoken about Ted Lasso on our technology podcast upgrade, we were wondering if season two would be Richmond winning the championship to go up to the premiership, right? Because that's just like we had the season where they lost. Maybe now we'll get the season where they would win. I hadn't really considered something like the FA Cup. Like they could still not get promoted, but right, they could win the FA Cup.
It's true. They could, which would mean, I think that would mean that they would also be like in the Euro League or something. Like they would have European football, even though
if they wanted to go that far.
Yeah.
Jason Sudeikis wants to go to Spain for a season, you know,
sure. If he wants to go to like, Kazakhstan for some Europa League shooting, whoopee, apologies to our listener in Kazakhstan. Brian?
I love that structurally, I cannot know anything about football, like I do, and know right when the episode starts what the stakes are because there's an in-universe reason for the commentators to be explaining to us how the team's doing, what they're doing, what the stakes are of this match, and where this tournament is going to lead to. And I know nothing about any of these different tournaments, so I'm really happy to be along for the ride for the characters and then also learn about football along the way.
They do a very good job in general in this show, I think, of just giving you just the right amount of information and not in such a way where you feel like somebody's like Greek chorusing you from the like football rule book. I think it's pretty good.
Exactly.
Having those announcers, I think, is very helpful, right? They lean on the announcers a lot to do the scene setting, and I think it works pretty well that they're, because that's what sports announcers do, right? Is they're weaving a narrative, and so they're taking advantage of that to let everybody know sort of what the narrative is as far as the team is concerned.
Yeah, I'm surprised they stuck with the announcers from season one, not for any particular reason other than they've brought in so many people from real English football into this season, including in this episode, Ian Wright, famed English footballer and now pundit, was in this episode. They create some like, it's like Forza for something. I didn't I didn't really catch what that meant.
Forza love of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Forza love of the
which
game.
Which is like Forza love of the game, which fine. Yeah. But, you know, so I'm surprised that they didn't maybe go with a more like four footballers recognizable team. They just stuck with the same actors, which is fine, but it's just interesting. They like I continue to find it so baffling how true they try and stay to actual English football in this season, especially. You know, like we've done all the Soccer Saturday stuff and all that kind of stuff. So it's just intriguing to me that they didn't change that up.
I've got a little trivia for you, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Arlo White, who is the guy who does the play-by-play.
Yeah.
He is English. He's not an actor. And in fact, he is the voice of the Premier League on NBC in the United States.
Okay.
So
fair
I think it might even be a tip of the cap to NBC being the originator of those Ted Lasso commercials.
There you go. That's good.
That they've got.
I'm back in.
Arlo
they
White.
Got me again, Jason.
It.
I'm
so
back
come
in.
Full circle.
So he's legit, but he doesn't broadcast in the UK because he's broadcasting UK soccer in the US, basically.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. So that's his deal anyway. Is this a soccer podcast now? Is that what happened?
It feels that way now.
I mean, it kind of is, either way. Right?
Kind of.
But I appreciated that little connection even there, because I think they work so hard to connect the dots everywhere and bring in people and references and all that. So it's cool that you brought that in and it actually makes sense, even that choice. So, yeah.
Don't worry, it's going to be a baking podcast a little bit later.
Yep, can't wait.
So let's see what happens in this episode. We know that Richmond's doing well with Roy. Rebecca is doing well because she's got her naked boyfriend who's making breakfast while she's doing text messages to guys on Banter. I don't know how modern dating works, but I was just kind of fascinated by that. He's naked in the kitchen, and she warns him that her cleaner is going to come. But, of course, it's actually her mother who has left her father again and is seeing her friend naked there. And then the cleaner comes and just says, I'll start in the other room, which is some professionalism there. Yeah. But this is the introduction to this one big storyline in this episode, which is Rebecca and her mom, who's left her father. And they end up, you know, they have lunch with Ted and Keeley. And we get to see a little bit. Actually, my favorite line in this entire, and I know there are lots of good jokes in this, but my favorite line in this entire episode is, I like meeting moms. It's an instruction manual on why they're nuts.
And yeah, that was brilliant. Good.
I watched that while I was at my mother's house, by the way, so I was thinking about that. I was pondering.
You're like, turn over and like, see, yes!
Pondering that a little bit.
I did want to note, I think this is the first time we've seen Richmond's away kit in the orange.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like the orange.
It was in the trailer, and that's actually, I don't know if they've talked about this on previous episodes or not, but the whole kit sponsor plot point was spoiled for me because the season two Ted Lasso trailer showed them in the orange Banter kit, and I thought, oh, new sponsor, that must be a plot point, and then it was a plot point. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice. We get to see them in that opening
shot. Well, it's
not
really a plot point right now because, shockingly enough, the Dubai Air plot point has not come back up yet. I thought that'd be the main thrust of the season because of the fact that they accused a literal government of corruption.
They did.
Oh, it's coming back around. I mean, are we? Come on, can I jump straight to the end?
Yeah, let's do it.
Right. So this is coming back. Right. They're going to tie all this together, I think, because now it's Sam, right, who is involved with Rebecca.
Yes, the text.
Will eventually.
Messages, yes.
So I'm sure that and the Dubai Air thing, they're going to find a way to meet each other.
Oh, that makes
sense. I don't
so much
know how, but it seems like that. Because that, I the last couple of episodes, it's kind of felt like that whole shirt sponsor thing was just way too easily resolved in a way that I was like, that doesn't seem right. Like, not, I didn't think it was like a plot hole, but like it just felt like there's a pin in this. Because it's like, I thought, oh, the club's going to be in financial trouble, right? I think we probably all expected that to a point. But then Banter's just there and it's fine, you know? Right. So it's like it all seems to have resolved itself. But now that Sam is clearly playing an even larger role in this season than he already was, which wasn't a large role for him this season, I think, I reckon that somewhere down the line, these things are going to intersect again.
Yeah, it feels like this is not a show that would let something just lay there like that. I kept thinking about his family because he's talked about his family, and like, is there a fallout in, you know, back home for his family, and will that affect him in some way? I don't know. I don't know, but yeah, it is. Also, I want to do a shout out to a previous episode, and I can't remember who the panelist was, but somebody did call out the Sam Rebecca thing from the first season rewatch as a possibility. And well done. Also, it is one of a couple Cheers references in this episode because, of course, Sam and Rebecca, that's referring to Ted Danson and Kirstie Alley from Cheers. Yeah, little Easter eggs in there if you want to find them. Well, let's talk about Rebecca and her boyfriends and her texting and her mom, because that's one of the interesting themes in this episode, is that plot line, which is, you know, it is, this episode's got parents and children, and the show, you know, definitely wants to talk about parents and children, and we see how that affects Ted as well. But I also feel like what this episode is kind of trying to get at is this idea that in the case of Rebecca's mom, she's somebody who pretends to change on a regular basis, but is not actually willing to really change. That's what I got out of it. I thought was the most interesting thing about the whole through line with Rebecca's mom is that Rebecca sort of knows her better, and it's paralleled with the conversation they have about Beard and his relationship with Jane too, which is a similar kind of thing, where she regrets sort of telling her mom you should just leave him, right? And then she goes back to her, so now she just sort of like lets her do this thing every few years where she leaves him, and then he buys, what is it, an environmentally conscious
gift.
Yeah. Tesla this time. And I in the mode of thinking of Ted Lasso and what does it all mean, that's sort of what I was thinking, is she reads her self-help books and whatever, she likes to be, say that she's open to change and introspection, but she's not in the end. What do you think about
the first season's theme was forgiveness? I think this season's theme is change so far. We saw Rebecca learn and grow from her first boyfriend when she dumps him in that cafe, realizing that, you know, life's too short and everything. I loved that moment. And we are seeing both Roy and Jamie grow and change in a bunch of different ways. Roy is now part of the team and he is coaching people differently. And Jamie has changed, but now Roy's trying to bring him back to the a-hole that he was before so he can pass and land things. And I think Rebecca seeing her mom go through something relatively similar to what she went through a few episodes before, and paralleling what she is doing with the guy from the dating app who's not Sam, I think it's a really wonderful way to see Rebecca reject what's happening to her mom and then internalize it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot happening around Rebecca that plays out in front of her. It's first Coach Beard and Jane. It all happens in front of her. We want to see this, that it's okay with Higgins telling him soon, but also something about the mom and her not telling the mom what doing the right thing and telling her the truth. At the same time, we remember from the first season that she was telling off Higgins for not telling her soon enough about her husband at the time. I don't know. And it seems to, it's all happening around her and it's forcing her to see something, but I still haven't put it all together. Whether it's about her, what it all plays in, what role it plays in the bigger story yet.
I wonder if trying to, you know, right, because we're in the middle of the story and we don't know where it's going. I wonder if some of this overall is about how there aren't easy answers. And that, because ultimately I think one of the things we're going to get here is that Ted sweeps in and makes everybody happy, and then season two is about, well, they didn't, that's not the end of the story, because it's not that easy. There's a lot more complexity here. And so when we talk about Rebecca and her mom, and then to bring in Beard and Jane's relationship, and that Higgins thinks that she's bad for him. And they have that Diamond Dogs conversation, which Roy hilariously is like, I'm out of here. Goodbye. See ya. Are you finished? Does the stupid barking mean you're done? Right. Like all that is great. But on one level, you want to have this platitude of like, well, you got to be honest with your friends and all of that. And Ted Lasso is like, no, don't get up in their business. I had a friend's girlfriend. I didn't like her through school. And that's the last best man speech I'll ever give, which is a real nice, like, oh, boy. But like, so it's honesty. We should be honest. What Higgins is saying is we need to be honest with him about this. We owe him this because he's our friend. And everybody else in the room says no. Well, I guess it's Nate and Ted. Says no. Mm. No, we're going to let it go because it's not our business. And we don't want to jeopardize our friendship with him by putting us on the opposite side of this person he's in a relationship with. And I get that. But it's also interesting to me because... And Higgins goes and has the conversation with him and you know, he gives him a hug and says, we'll never speak of this again, because I think Beard appreciates that he cares about it. But like, I feel like this is one of the things this show is trying to say, which is you can't just have the platitude of, oh, we'll be honest and it'll be fine. It's like, these are people and it's way more complicated than that.
I think with Higgins in particular, I think it was Rebecca telling him last season or this season that, why didn't you tell me we were friends? Whereas now she's the one telling him, don't tell him, don't get involved, it will go badly. So it feels like she's in two boats, kind of. Do you see that as well? Of the scene played in front of her. So she's supposed to learn something, or maybe...
I think she does learn something, though,
which
is why like she's going that evening to actually have the conversation with her mum that she knows she needs to.
Mm.
Like when she calls Ted and is like, I'm going to go have the difficult conversation.
Right. She's
like,
going to have that honest conversation again.
Yeah, because, you know, she saw Higgins have like basically like be an adult and go and talk to Beard. She observed that in her prominent hat.
Yeah.
The hat was amazing. Oh, I felt like I was meant to get something from the hat, but I didn't get something from the hat.
In my notes, I have Rebecca's hat. And then the next note down is Keely's hat.
There's lots of hats in this one. So this is one of those shows where I feel like everything is supposed to tell me something. Mm. So I know I overlook at things, but I think that's something that's clever about it too. But she does learn. And she wants to go and talk to her mom and say to her mom, like, you need to get out of this cycle, or like, you know, just choose a path that you actually want to stick to and stick to it.
And well, when Higgins talks to Beard, Beard's response is to nod. And I think it's a really interesting way Brendan Hunt plays that it's he's acknowledging why a friend would be concerned. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, this is my decision to make and I've made it, but I understand why you would be worried. And I appreciate that you cared enough to come have an awkward conversation with me. Like, I think that's all bounded in there, which is interesting. Also, listeners to this podcast will know that I have a pet theory, which is that Beard and Jane have their own show that's happening simultaneously. This is a weird episode where the Beard and Jane show like comes into the Ted Lasso show a little bit. Like, oh, wait a second. I thought they were completely in their own TV show that they were doing that we don't get
to
see.
It's a crossover episode.
It is a little bit. I enjoyed that. And then we also see Jane and what does Rebecca say? Like, she's adorable, but also, oh, I forget what she says, but she's a lot.
Intense.
Yeah.
Intense,
I mean, it's just like a little bit of both. And it's like, yeah, that's it. And that's who she is. She, at the end, she gives him a hat and says that she's super into Oliver Twist.
Oh yeah.
She
it's all about the hat.
She jumps out and scares him and then gives him the weird hat.
Yep. Intense.
There's another... I think this show, in every episode, they do quite a few parallels in between different father-son relationships. In this case, it's about, I suppose, mother-son relationship. I don't know, parent...
parent-child relationship, for sure.
Relationship, and then romantic relationships. And there's something interesting, I think, in between Beard and Jane and Ted and Rebecca, in that... they all need each other, but it feels like Ted and Rebecca is with a choice. It's like, I need you, but it's your choice, or you do it in your own time. Whereas with Beard and Jane, it's like the situation is so urgent and complex. It just happened that I need you right now and we have to move together. And I felt that weird dynamic and also a parallel in between how different relationships can work. So I thought that was interesting, just an observation. Also, just because there's a lot of name dropping and Rebecca's mom with Esther Perel and Brené Brown, I really enjoyed hearing her drop all of those references, because I like to think that Rebecca's mom just suddenly discovered Instagram or mm-hmm. Facebook, and she came across these new theories that gave her agency and empowered her, and now she's going to be her own woman.
Yeah. When life gives me lemons, I'm going to make a lemon mojito. Okay, mom.
So tasty. Lemon lavender mojito. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And I'm one of those people who obviously has listened to Esther Perel. She's quite big, a big pop therapist at the moment. And even today I looked for her Instagram, and she has this theory that you can get everything you need from one person, from your partner. And it's interesting to look at that through Rebecca's lens, I suppose. And she essentially has three men in her life right now that she depends on. And that, again, is just an observation. I'm still struggling to form any sort of theories, but she, because we're in the middle of the story, but she has Luca, she has Ted, and she has the mystery, well, we know now, Sam, the philosophical.
Mm-hmm. I was so pleased that wasn't Ted, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like, totally a fake out last time, right?
Said, like, they were just messing with us. It was so clever. Yeah. Like, it was one of those things that was so... obvious subtle that I knew it wasn't actually going to be him. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, this is a moment which we're pretending is subtle, but we're showing you, like, the transition of the text messages, like, phone to phone. So I was super pleased. I didn't want to see them going that way. If they do go that way, fine, but it's not where I wanted the show to go right now. Was just a love interest for Ted at all. I don't really think that makes sense for the show at the moment.
Well, going into this season, I thought perhaps it would be interesting to see Ted in a relationship and navigating that, but that hasn't happened, and I think it hasn't happened for a reason, which is one of the big things in this episode, right? Which is Ted has his own issues, and we've been dealing with that all season. That just because he signed the divorce papers and had that moment with his family in London and all of that doesn't mean that he doesn't have some real issues that he needs to work through. And we got a hint earlier this season when he's talking to Sam about Sam's dad and about fathers and sons and about his dad. We had the barbecue sauce story last time about the sports bar. And here he says, you know, that his dad was hard on himself. What does that mean? Right? Like, this is going somewhere. And in this episode, just to break out all the Ted stuff that's in this episode, Ted is told by Rebecca's mom that obviously your wife left you. Mm-hmm. He gets a phone call from his son's school because his son left his lunch at home and he's going on a field trip. And then, of course, his ex-wife is there to do it. But it is distancing him from his family, how far away he is. So he has these moments. And there's the where he says, my wife, well, you know, his mom. Right. Like, so this episode gives us all those kind of punches to Ted's gut of like, this is, you know, you have issues here with your divorce that you have not, you know, you're still not dealing with this. And we've seen him avoiding Dr. Sharon all season. Obviously, he doesn't want to talk about it. He's avoiding talking about it. And then out on the pitch during the match. And if you watched it once, you may have missed it, but it's there. We get Jamie Tartt's dad, the voice of Jamie Tartt's dad yelling at Jamie. And Ted has a panic attack at that point and runs off the field like he's got food poisoning, leading to the joke of the episode, which is there a good fish pie? He's had a bad fish pie. Is there a good fish pie? So this is, and then Ted obviously ends up in Dr. Sharon's office and says, I need to make an appointment. So we finally got the kind of the resolution of getting him to that point where we see this. How are you all feeling about sort of like what's going on with Ted here?
I liked that they set up that it was going to be Rebecca to go help find him and help him, right? That she recognized, she knew what that was because she helped him in season one after a panic attack. And then we're just following her around. I will say I absolutely adored the fact that the the winning goal was happening off screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, just like this. See, this isn't a show about football. The main football thing happens in the background, right? Like, I just thought that was a very nice touch.
Part of the football that matters is, and we should talk about this a little bit, but is Nate and what Nate does, right? But that's a personal choice by a character that we understand because of who they are and why they're there. That's the important part. And then the winning goal, we just hear it. We don't even see it. And it's an amazing moment, right? Because Rebecca's looking for Ted, and it's very tense and it's very upsetting. And then the team runs in, and they're all celebrating.
The show portrays panic attacks so well. There was last season with Rebecca at the karaoke bar, and then this season, much less intensely with Ted just now this episode. The other thing I like about Ted's arc in this particular episode, along with some of the way he's interacted with Dr. Sharon, is that Ted talks so fast and so cleverly that if he ever has to change what he says, it must be difficult for him. Oh yeah, my wife, his mother, that must be something he slipped up a whole bunch of different times. Struggling with telling Dr. Sharon doc instead of doctor, or the other way around, doctor instead of doc, he defaults to doc. And it's going to be hard to watch Ted change in the way that he speaks. He's going to speak more slowly. He's going to speak more deliberately. You know, in universe, I imagine he rehearses all the little quips he does, before he actually deploys them to the other people around him, because he talks so quickly and cleverly that he has to resort to things that are already in his brain that if he ever has to change them, it's going to be a rough time for him.
My read on the panic attack was that we could see the episode building up to Ted not really being needed at home. He thought he would be, but they managed to get the work sorted out without him. And then it comes that the thing between Roy and Jamie, and Roy telling him that you screwed him up, and he has a better thought of what to do with Jamie. And then he scores, like it works. It just shows that, he's probably not needed here either. But I do remember what you're saying, that the words that were coming back to him were of Jamie's dad. So I'm not quite sure how it all plays out, but it just feels like he has no purpose in his life and where he thought he did. He doesn't feel needed. And I can imagine all of that can force a crash.
Yeah, I wonder, there are a lot of questions about Ted's role here, especially since he's, sort of found Roy, and Nate obviously has a lot to offer tactically. And Coach Beard is Coach Beard. He is always and eternal. What's Ted's role? And I think so much of this season is taking season one and saying, okay, it's not so simple. And in the long run, Ted is far away from home. He's dealing with a lot of these kind of emotional issues that he's got, probably baggage from his whole life. But also there's this question of he is the American football coach who's come over to coach soccer, and people like him, and he's had some success. But I do think that the show is also just laying down the idea that, do they need him? Is all that he's got to offer this kind of positive, happy talk stuff? And is that successful? Because at the beginning of the season, we're sort of suggested that everybody's happy, but they're not winning. They're not actually being successful. And Sharon calls that out, right? So, I think it's a good point to say, now we've got these four coaches and it's the Roy Kent thing. And it's like, okay, well, no, the Wonder Kid did this one, right? But it's like Ted, I think there's a role for Ted, because Ted is so good at what he does, which is getting people, including his coaches, to perform. But I do think that you could flip that on its head and say, where does Ted really fit in once Roy Kent becomes, he's elevated Nate and Roy Kent has come in, and what is left for Ted here in London? I don't know. But I love that the show, and I think this is maybe why there's some backlash about season two, part of it is, I think a lot of people binge season one and they're not used to the weekly schedule and they're judging the whole before seeing the whole. Mm-hmm. But I also think a part of it is the show is itself questioning season one a little bit and saying, well, that was a nice start, but it's way more complicated than that. Because of course it is.
It's like the perfect man isn't perfect, right? Like Ted Lasso of season one, he is this perfect individual who's coming in and he's making everybody's lives better. Like, that's what he does. Well, now everybody's lives are better, except for the fact that they're relegated, but nobody really seems to care about that because they're all happier, which isn't a bad thing, right? Like, they were all unhappy in the Premiership, and now they're happy in the Championship, and they're starting to see their fortunes change. I mean, what was considered bad for them was that they were drawing. Well, they weren't losing, right?
Right.
So, like, you know, the bad streak that they were having, which is they weren't winning, but they also weren't losing. They were doing fine, right? So I think that's... I don't really want to talk too much about the backlash thing, but I think that might be part of it, right? Where, like, this season's TED is ineffectual in a lot of places, and so it takes the shine off him a little bit, and we're also forced to look at him and question him. And I think that that isn't what season one was about, but I think ultimately this is a better show for it, I think, because we're able to kind of, we're going to see growth in him, which I think is going to be very cathartic by the time this season's over.
Well, and definitely, I think some of this is about the limits of empathy, right? That the idea that Ted brought empathy, that's his superpower. Like, he understands people and he sees them and he wants them to be better people, which is good, but is not enough. The whole idea that they were just drawing and they're all happy, but they're not winning. And, you know, as much as Dr. Sharon wants everybody to be sort of like good psychologically, she's a sports psychologist, right? Her teams hire her to get their players to play better and not to feel happy but play bad. And I feel like the Jamie and Roy thing in this episode is getting right at that and kind of undermining, right? Roy says right out, you screwed up Jamie. You made him a better person, but he's just an average player. And I think that this is really interesting that the show is basically saying, look, Jamie needs to be better balanced, but sometimes it is going to be appropriate for Jamie to be awful because his jerky, arrogant self out on the pitch is what made him brilliant. But what Roy says is, like, not all the time, right? Like, there's a time and a place for it. We'll give you the signal. They do. But you got to understand you can't be like that all the time. You need to find balance. But that's finding balance, but also embracing your inner asshole, basically, is sort of what the show and Roy Kent is saying is, yeah. You can't just everybody be happy. It's more complicated than that.
I think, like, what Roy has done and what Roy's doing for Jamie, I don't know if Roy knows it so much or he's just not communicating it in this ways. He's helping Jamie channel that side to him. Jamie's problem is he was that way to his teammates. That was Jamie's problem.
Exactly.
Right? Like, the rest, Richmond don't care how much of a
Jamie could pass more, right? He was a bad teammate on the field too, but he went too far so that he's now just passing and not
shooting.
But
then also, like, something that Roy has done similarly about channeling is Nate has had rage in him this whole season, right? Like, and it's been something I've been keeping my eye on a lot of, like, what are they doing to Nate? Like, something's happening and it's not really been clear. And I thought, you know, I think we maybe all thought, oh, that last episode was going to be it, but that didn't really have the payoff. Like, you know, I thought he was going to just explode in that restaurant or whatever, but that didn't really happen. But it was here. It was in this episode. And I still don't know completely where they're going with Nate or what they're choosing to do with Nate. It's interesting for me. But, like, clearly we're seeing that he's got this anger in him. The anger has only been exacerbated by the fact that he feels like he's being pushed to the side for Roy. He was angry at Roy. That anger led him to make a great decision. Now he's been validated for that, so maybe he doesn't feel as mad anymore. I don't know. But still, for Nate, he has this rage in him, and now he finally channeled it into action and took charge when he needed to.
I think it's extremely ironic for both Nate and Jamie that they are taking their a-holedness and channeling it into being better at their job and looking for excuses to do so. Mm-hmm. When this show is produced by Apple and having been found by Steve Jobs with a very similar culture, I think that's extremely ironic.
I think, you know, we should mention Led Tasso for a moment too, because that is the Led Tasso is a comedy bit, but it's also that, right? Which is, that's the flip side of it is the other kind of coach you can be is the hard ass. and that's the Led Tasso thing where he's like, I'm going to yell at him and I'm going to be that kind of coach. And Roy Kent's a great example. Roy Kent is the gruffest. And shout out to Britt Goldstein, who wrote this episode. Roy Kent is so gruff and so disagreeable. But I think the magic of Roy Kent has always been that he's also... he also knows at least a little bit of when to modulate it. He's learning it too. And so when he imparts this to Jamie, I feel like he's saying essentially, okay, you're a little bit more like me than I want to admit, which is you can't be a jerk all the time. You got to get in touch with who you are, but you also can't lose your edge because then you've lost who you are. So it's, I love the whole thing with him. Where Keeley says, just agree with him. He hates it. And he's like, okay, I'm a conformisty little boy with bad hair. He's like, that was great. Thanks. And it's like, that's it. But Roy is the character of this show. Right. But I like how they connect. And Brian, I appreciate you bringing this up because like that dynamic of Roy and Jamie and of when are you a jerk and when are you not a jerk and what's going on with Nate and what's going on with Ted. All of this stuff is what the show is trying to sort through, which is, you know, what is success and is personal success. Talk about Apple. Like, I know we're going to go there for a second. Like, when is personal success aligned with organizational success? And how do you navigate when it's not, right? Because what if the best thing for your organization is to do something that makes all your people unhappy? Well, that's not great. But also, if you make your people happy and then your organization suffers, how do you balance that? Because sports is a bottom line driven business. And in the end, you do need to win matches no matter how happy people are. And I think that that's all part of the struggle of season two.
Just buy everyone a PS5, Jason. They'll love you.
Great, except for the coaches don't get it. Because that's Nate. I think the rage thing, I mean, anger. We have a lot of funny anger in Ted Lasso. This season, especially, you know, Roy Kent. But Nate's anger is different, right? It is a bottled up, unhealthy, unpleasant thing. And somebody who otherwise is a fairly pleasant guy we want to root for, but he has something burning in his core that is dangerous and damaging. And I'm a little worried for Nate as this season goes along. But I think it's interesting that the show is also setting us up to deal with that kind of completely dysfunctional anger.
Why do you think he keeps spitting?
Yeah, he does that.
I don't know. That was a callback to
he
the other
one. He did that in the last one, as if that was maybe that's just a thing, right? Because he spat in the mirror,
yeah,
as his interpretation of what Rebecca said for him to do, which was like she said, make yourself big. That didn't work for him.
It's his
when
it's...
he spat at himself, which I didn't. That was the thing that was upsetting. It was at himself, and so like I don't know if it was like which one of those two. Is it just the act of spitting that's violent, or is he spitting at himself?
On the sideline, he's not doing it himself, but I do think it's that Led Tasso kind of thing where he's like he's turning himself into the monster.
Right, that turns him into like a thug, like a hoodlum,
in order to stand up for because he's so meek. It's like it's like Jamie, right? Okay, we've come back to it, right? It's like Jamie in reverse. He's so meek, and the only thing that he can do is become a monster. And you can't be a monster or you need to integrate your parts, right? You need to be a whole person. And Nate is not integrated. He is either meek Nate or he is a monster. Right? That's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw it out there. Everybody can take it.
Also note that he didn't have to build himself up for being a monster at the beginning of the season to the new Kit guy. Because he knows that job so well, he didn't have to think and hype himself up to, you know, say, why'd you put lavender in the wash? Things like that. And whereas he had to really build himself up to make the shot in the game this episode and to ask for the table last episode.
Yeah, to me, it looks like he has just two types of voices in his head, and he feels disgusted that he's so critical with himself, with that part, and just tries to defeat that part to be able to thrive into this Hulk that is able to be confident and take charge in the way that he has on the pitch in this episode.
It also shows you the limits of what Ted can do, right? Because Ted identified him and has made him a coach, and he's very good and very knowledgeable and was really a lifeline for Ted when Ted and Beard didn't know anything about soccer. But that's not enough, right? Like, identifying him, he still has a real inferiority complex that comes out when Roy Kent strides in last episode, and in this episode when Beard and Roy are talking and all of that. Like, he flips the switch and becomes the monster, and then he does what he wants, and what he wants is right? But he has such an inferiority complex, he has not integrated that. He's just sort of meek and mild and doesn't do it until he hulks out. Yeah.
I
think that he definitely seems to be an introverted kind of person that isn't confident enough to speak up or say things, and he'd probably just be stand behind at the party and observe the dynamics, and probably that's his skill, that he knows, he's observed the old players and how they interact, that's why he's such a good strategist in this particular team. And with people who have this critical voice with themselves, they put themselves down with it. I think he needs to have these violent breakthroughs to go past that voice that keeps him down. And I think in time, with doing that more frequently and having the successes like he has had in this episode, that breakthrough might just become smoother for him. But that's how I see it for Nate. And I want to say one more thing with Nate, because he was describing his play towards the end of the episode in front of the press, the Wonder Kid part. Going back to Jamie and how he's brilliant at being a prick, and his major skill is doing that so well and getting into the heads of the opponent's other players. And it's so interesting to see that there's this one player who he says to, look at me, you're going to fault me, and then I'm going to do a penalty kick, and I'm going to score from all the way over here. And that plays out as he said. And as Rebecca is walking through the locker to find Ted and all, and Nate has put into play his I forgot, the brick wall, whatever.
It's like the bus or
park
something.
Park the bus thing.
We hear that, and especially as he describes it at the end, that, oh, if you drag it long enough, someone will make a mistake, because that's human nature. The player that made the mistake was the one that Jamie got into his head. So that's his skill, is annoying people and destabilizing them during a very important match. So I really appreciated that. That's his skill.
and I think the message is like, inflict it on them, not us. Right?
Yeah.
Learn to turn it on and off. You need to pass more than you did, but you also need to be you and use the fact that you're infuriating on other people, please, not on us during the match.
That's his unfair advantage.
I like how Roy... Okay, so Roy hates Jamie and he says all these things about Jamie, but then he gives Jamie exactly the right advice. And then when he's lining up and they're like, well, how do we want to handle this kick? Because it's at range, so he's got a penalty kick, but it's not in the box or anything. So it's just
a free kick.
A free kick. And Roy's just like,
I fulfilled my contractual obligation.
Thank you. Thank you, football expert. I forgot what that was called. Yes, because it's they form like little walls and things, but it's not in the box. So you could just kick it off to the side to somebody else and start it going. You can kick it doesn't have to be a shot on the goal, but Roy's confidence in Jamie, right? Which as gruff as he is and as angry as he gets with Jamie, he's like, no, he's gonna make it. That guy, he's gonna make it. Like he because he has supreme confidence in Jamie, because he knows this Jamie and he knows what he can do. And I love that. Like, I feel like that's so Roy Kent, for him to express talk about parents and children too, express his appreciation and confidence in Jamie when Jamie's not around. That's very...
So we've been talking a lot in this episode about what Ted's role is, right? And a minute ago when you were talking about Rebecca, that came into my mind. Ted would actually be good in doing a job like Rebecca's job, where the role of an individual like that in the club is to bring people together, and have them work together. That's what Ted does. Like, Ted's value is not his knowledge of football, because he has none.
Right.
But what we can continue skills. To see him do in this season and in a previous season is, as we already said it, right? Like, identifying people that will work. Yeah. He did this for Roy, too, and putting them in the places that they need to be in. He's really like a manager of people. That's his skill.
I think, apologies to, I guess, all of you, because you're all not that into sports like I am. But I will say, one of the things that I've seen recently in some sports at some organizations is a realization that beyond the sort of money ball of like, well, we've cracked the numbers and now we know a different kind of player that we want to use. I think there's an understanding now that, and Ted Lasso, because it's written by sports fans, I think they understand this too, which is sports has been so macho for so long that there's this feeling like nobody asks for help. Nobody tries to get better. If you're a success, you never change, because why mess with success? And there's a whole sort of new generation of organizations that are realizing your manager doesn't actually need to be manager, coach, whatever you call it, doesn't need to necessarily be the person who does the X's and the O's, because you have staff for that. But you do want somebody who is a manager of people. Like, my favorite sport is baseball. This is one of the great debates that seems to now be resolving, and the idea that a baseball manager doesn't need to be all in on strategy. You can have a strategy guy to do that part. It needs to be good with people. Needs to manage the human beings that make up the roster, that yes, they have statistics and they have skills and all of that. But like, what's important as a leader in sports is to understand the people, to get them to work together, to get them to buy into what you're selling, which is everybody should have, the goal to be better. Even a star could be better. Even an aging player like Roy Kent can be better if they're open to change. Like, this is a real trend, and Ted Lasso reflects it, I think, in that way, that your modern lead coach is Ted Lasso, essentially. Maybe not with all the aphorisms, but should be somebody who understands people. Because in the end, for all the statistics and all the equipment, in the end, it's the people who have to do their job on the field, the pitch, wherever it is. And so that matters the most. And I think Ted Lasso gets that exactly right. The show. Exactly
we
right.
We can call it the Ted Lasso effect. Oh, okay. Known sport forever now.
Yeah.
There was one thing I wanted to say, just because, you know, we talk about Roy Kent a lot, right? And Jason, I know that Roy is your favorite in the show.
I do love Roy.
I think at a certain point, if not already, the executive producers of the show will be really mad they called it Ted Lasso. Because if they would have given it another name, when Sudeikis is unable to continue with the show, which there is some, I mean, we've spoken about this, some say it'll be 3 seasons. I kind of say, well, let's see what the money's like. You know, maybe the shooting schedule can change and be better for him, or whatever it's going to be.
Right.
You know?
He's got young kids back home and is now divorced. So he has to make an effort to be with his children, and they're in the U.S. And he said sort of like, they asked about a 4th season of Ted Lasso. And I'm like, unless it's set in the U.S., which is an interesting not a no, it doesn't necessarily work. But yeah, you're right. It's like, what if this was the AFC Richmond show?
Or if it was called Football is Life, and then this show would be called Ted Lasso, but, you know, nevertheless, then they would continue. I mean, and there is also the possibility that there is a spinoff and it's called Roy Kent.
Yeah.
I think they might do that.
Yeah.
And I think Apple would, if the show continues with the success that it's getting, I think they would be wild not to do literally everything they can. I mean, Apple knew it, right? They signed season 2 and 3 at the same time before I think season 1 was even over. And so, you know, they know what they're doing with it. But I imagine that there is that feeling of like, oh, darn it. Like, because Roy is very clearly a standout character. Everybody loves the character and it's played so well to the point that Roy is one of the major characters in the season, which he wasn't in the first one. He was, you know, as much as Jamie or as much as anybody else. But now, pretty much every B plot in the show involves Roy.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see. What you and I talk about this regularly, Mike, is there's the artistic considerations, and then they back the money truck up to your house, and you're like, okay,
or
we
the
could
demands
do more.
Truck, right? Like it might not be money for Sudeikis, but he might have a issue with the amount of time they shoot. It's like, well, we're going to condense your shooting schedule. You'll be in the show less, whatever it is.
Right. Some people do have their firm artistic, like, we're done. We're never going to revisit this again. But I do wonder if they get to the end of the third season process and Apple is like, we really want more. What can we do? And have them say, well, Roy's going to go back home and we could do a season about Roy getting hired as an American football coach in America and how...
You mean Ted. And Ted's going to go back home.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, the Ted is. Oh, man. Yeah. Can you imagine... Roy Kent, American football coach. No. But Ted goes back to America and Ted and Beard maybe, and there's a continuation of sort of like how this adapts to a new set. And I don't know whether they'd want to do that show or not. But the other option is what if they made a show that was after Ted leaves Richmond? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is how they make it 20 episodes a season, because they split half and half.
Oh.
Like, I'm reminded of the season of The West Wing, right? Where they're doing the campaign and showing The West Wing continue.
So if Apple does a press release where they announce season 4 and 5 of Ted Lasso, we'll know the truth. It's actually two shows that they've interleaved.
Mm-hmm. This isn't just one show.
Yeah. You getting it yet?
Please don't encourage Bill Lawrence to do another season without the main characters of the show.
Maybe he'll be upset about
it. We all remember what happened to Scrubs. So let's see what else. We have covered a lot of stuff. There's probably some other stuff that we haven't covered yet that we should get to. So I'm gonna throw some things out there, and then you all should throw some things out there that you want to talk about that we haven't gotten to yet. I wanted to mention that in the opening scene, when Ted enters the facility, he says hi to the receptionist and to the other guy. And I don't know if we've seen that other guy before, but that's the guy with the laugh. He does the crazy, like, ha, 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 ha. And that's the guy that Higgins is like, I can't be near him. When he loses his office, he's like, I can't be near him. Because he has that laugh, and they're like, oh, yeah, that laugh, and here is where he laughs. And I'm like, that is a real laugh. And then I thought, oh, it's that guy. It's the guy with the laugh.
I did wonder, like, why are we having to listen to this guy? It's funny, but, like, this is a lot of laugh.
That is, like, 4 episodes of setup for that. But that is the laughing guy
show.
That Higgins doesn't want to share an office with.
This is where I get to say my Ted Lasso catchphrase that's probably going to annoy you, Dina, because I say it all the time. I can't believe that they're able to make this show. I just can't. It's so perfect and joyous and stupid, and they put all this time into it with little things like that, which are not needed. Or like how many rom-com references in the last one? They didn't need to do all of them, but they did. I adore this television program so much.
Speaking of Higgins, I love watching him try to work away from his desk. It's like he read somewhere that millennials are able to work with just a laptop at a cafe or something, but he brings around his freaking Newton's cradle and his cup of pens.
And he picks the worst places. There's got to be a better place in that entire building than the gym to work. They have a cafeteria. They must, right?
The joke about the Dukes of Hazzard, and over here you all probably call it the Earls of Risk. I wish that had not been in the trailer, because it's a great joke and I already heard it. So I'm like, yeah, there's the Earls of Risk. I got it. All right. But I love that.
I knew I'd heard the joke before, but I couldn't remember
it's in
where
the trailer.
From.
It's in the trailer. Okay. My favorite part, and it's a sitcom, it's a comedy bit, but I love it, is that the three guys in the pub don't have anything else to do but yell at television. So when there's no soccer on, they yell at Great British Bake Off. And so they're yelling cake related things at the TV during the lunch that they're having there with Rebecca's mom, including finally at the end, poor little cake, soggy bottom. Which, if you watch the Great British Bake Off, you know, it's
nobody wants
made
a
me
soggy
laugh.
Bottom, Jason.
No soggy bottoms. Makes Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry very unhappy. Also, I enjoyed the detail of it's my psychic Tish calling. She said she would call when I needed her the most. Isn't that amazing?
This is so impressive.
Yeah.
I liked full-blown QAnon. Beard's mom is full-blown QAnon.
After
that
he screams
so
maniacally
good.
and he's like, how is Mrs. Beard doing full-blown QAnon? Yep. Okay. Yep.
So good.
Again, it's the thing about I love meeting moms. It's an instruction manual on why they're nuts. So good.
There's no world where a dating app would let you make a voice call. Like, dating apps need to have fewer and fewer communication features, and the fact that it lets you just call somebody
is that second
is
app another dating app then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure if it was like some weird messaging app. I do love how bad all the UI design is for all these applications, but I feel like that's true to life. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
I have a question for you. So, in the previous season, pretty much all of the football that we saw was being done with computer graphics, was my understanding. A lot of it was CGI. It really looked like they were on a real pitch with real fans this time. What do you guys think? That looked to me like that was a real pitch, because the last, when they were doing the finals and stuff in the last season, it all looked too polished.
I think that there's a real audience because, stadium filled with people, because I remember watching a week ago of an interview, a video Zoom interview with the guy who plays Roy Kent. And I think he was saying how amazing it was, this build up to, and then to end it with walking out on the pitch and the crowd going wild over him, and it sounded like that's real people. I don't know the logistics, but at some point.
I expect they are going to go to Wembley.
They're going to Wembley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Like, it's my expectation, so maybe it's Wembley.
Well,
because like, I feel like they could do it now. Like, and this is a normal thing, like in TV. Like, I've actually been in the very limited football matches I've been to in my life. Something like this happened. They came onto the pitch to shoot something for a TV show or a movie.
Right.
It's a thing that you can do in halftime or whatever.
Right. I think it's possible. It's also possible that they got a small block of fans,
mm-hmm.
and then they do that thing where they move them around.
Philip
Michaels
different
was
to the first season.
Philip Michaels was in Moneyball, and he was part of a group of people at the Oakland Coliseum who basically they were like, sit over here, and now everybody move over here, and now everybody move over here, so that they had fans behind, real fans behind the shots that they were doing. So it's not the whole stadium, but they get a block of people who are basically fans probably who signed up to come and be in the background. Mm. And then I also think they could do things with the stadium so that they may even have had a day where they shot a bunch of scenes with fans in the background, and then they drop those fans into whatever stadium they wanted to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see Wembley one
it
way
had
or
a
another.
Different
right?
look. And yeah, we're going to see Wembley. I'm confident of that.
They called it out. They're going to do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't have said it. Like, there are certain things that say that like they do on this show because they have to do the exposition to it. And when they said, "Oh, on the finals at Wembley," I was like, "Oh, is it? I know that already, but why are you telling me?"
Yeah. You can earn a place in the semifinals at Wembley Stadium. Yes.
Something that stood out to me was, I think it was three moments where the camera just lingered a bit. And one of them that you've just explained was the guy with the laugh. But the other two was when Rebecca got back home and we saw this shot of her shoes
on
the floor.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And then pouring the tea for her mom, but that could have been just awkward silence or something.
No,
but
I noticed both of those things.
Yeah, it was odd.
The camera really settled on those moments. Mm. Like, I was meant to have picked something up from them.
I mean, they're expensive shoes, I think, Louboutin.
Sure.
But does that matter? Is it tied into the Dubai Air losing a sponsor and she's spending a lot? Well, obviously she is. Those two scenes did not add to anything for me, but
yet
they spent a lot of time on it.
Yet, you're thinking about it now.
Four episodes from now, we'll learn something about T
breaks.
And Rebecca.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a fan of horror movies, that shot with the shoes looked like somebody was about to trip and die on them.
Yes, right? Like, it looked like there was, don't forget about the shoes. But then she just went upstairs. Like, okay.
Yeah, I think she was just, you know, preparing, you know, getting comfortable. And then, you know, but yeah, I wondered about that too. The shoes.
Foreshadowing.
Anything else we haven't covered that you want to throw in there?
I mean, we maybe haven't made enough of a point of Sam and Rebecca.
Mm.
Like, maybe we don't need to go through it, but just in case people feel like maybe we haven't touched on it. I don't really think there's much to say at this point, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's odd because of the power dynamic.
Well, that will be the problem.
Yes.
It would be such a mess in the whole club if that happens.
But, like, remember, neither of them know it's each other.
Yeah, of course. But if it does go that way, that would be a mess to clean up in the show and bring back the positivity. And I don't know, as I was saying earlier, like, Rebecca has three people in her life performing various roles. And just because she has this connection with Sam through the app doesn't mean anything, because, you know, we've done app dating, and the fact that you get along with someone through messages doesn't mean you'll have chemistry in real life either. So I still see these as red herrings in a way, where, like, there's still plot points, but it doesn't mean it will necessarily go that way, just as the Ted little nudges didn't go that way either. Mm-hmm. So,
we'll see.
Yeah, but it's all a mystery, and we've seen Nate going over the mountain in his journey, maybe Jamie as well, and now we're still waiting for Ted and Rebecca's moments.
Yeah, Roy has too.
Yeah, Roy as well. Yeah, he's settled in his role, and yeah, so it's a lot to still see in this show.
Kudos to the writers for making the banter text between Rebecca and mystery person. Both Sam and Ted, I rewatched some episodes this morning, and I can hear them now in Sam's voice when we previously assumed it was Ted. And I think that's a brilliant writing job, too. Mm.
Well, the one thing I will say, though, I think that there's more cockiness in those messages than Sam actually has. And so I'm intrigued to see, like, well, talking about, like, what would it be like when they're actually in that environment together. I think Sam is a little bit more bashful, and especially to Rebecca, like, a little bit more bashful and respectful, not in a way that cheekiness in those messages would necessarily come across of him. So that might be an issue for him to try and get over when he finds out that it's his boss's boss.
right,
like, that's gonna be like, I don't think he will be able to carry that through there. Like, that's gonna be an interesting dynamic between the two of them as to how he will manage that,
because she does come across, and her whole role is to be the scary boss.
Yes, you would be terrified. Even though she's nice, you would be terrified of her.
Yeah.
She can do that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so what kind of spy would Sam be if... Oh, whoops, sorry.
Yeah, also from Rebecca's standpoint, Rebecca doesn't want to be the woman who owns a football team and then sleeps with the players.
Yeah.
That's not what she wants.
That's a really good point.
She doesn't want to be that.
That's going to be her issue, right? Yeah, yeah. Because then she's no different to her husband.
But
really.
Maybe they will learn. Maybe they will learn something. Maybe they'll both learn and grow. That's probably what will happen somehow on a TV show. Maybe with some pain involved. Well, next week,
I feel like we've hit a turning point in the show now. I feel like this. You know, I feel like there's been a lot of setup, and now we're going to start going in a different direction for the rest of the season.
Well, this is the halfway point.
I'm excited about. Yeah. Yeah.
So
it feels like it too.
Yeah.
Right? Like it genuinely has that feel to it.
It does.
There was lots happening in this episode. I had so many gasping moments.
it was a really good one. I'm really pleased we were here for this one.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Same point as last season, by the way, when the divorce happened. So
midway through
the season is going to be, I think, surprise tragedy in the middle of Ted Lasso seasons. Maybe in the same way that, like, the first season of Game of Thrones meant the penultimate episode is when the big twist happens.
Yeah.
I think from here on in, and comedies, mid-season is going to be the big depressing episode.
Well, next week, it's going to be great. Next week's episode is titled Headspace. I think Ted's going to download a meditation app.
Yeah, I feel like that's about right. I think he needs it, you know? He needs to take a minute.
Dr. Sharon's going to give him some advice. Yeah. Needs to meditate
a
little
promo
bit.
Promo code.
Yep.
That's what she does. She just downloads Headspace onto their phones and just sits them in the corner.
Yeah.
She's not very good at her job.
Done. Salt. That's what's happening in that office. They're just listening
like
to a
Monument
meditation.
Valley showing up in House of Cards.
Yeah.
Look at your iPhone. They all turn to the camera and say, see, with Apple products like the iPhone, you can be a happy person. All right.
Oh, I love these AirPods Max.
So that brings us to the end of this episode of Football is Life. Who will be here next week? I have no idea. I have to schedule that episode. But we won't. Probably. That's okay. It's been a great conversation. Brian Hamilton, thank you for being here.
Please, sir. Can I have some more?
Mike Hurley, thank you.
I'm just trying to build bridges here, Jason.
And Adina Hurley, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here. I don't have any.
You don't have a quote to say. That's just fine.
Life is long, Jason, and life is short, and sometimes it's neither, but it always is what it is.
Well said. And I've got a call from my psychic that I have to get. She said that she would be calling when I needed her most. Thank you for listening to Football is Life. We'll be back next week, or, well, not us, but people will be back next week to talk about that next episode. Until then, goodbye.